morgan-outdoors.com.
Hi, I'm Janice Adams. Starting Monday, October 6th, join me on my new day and new time, Monday evenings at 8, for the Janice Adams Show. Conversations about how to turn silence into voice, setbacks into strategy, and how to turn crisis into courage in these trying times. The Janice Adams Show, Monday nights at 8, starting October 6th on Radio Catskill. I'm Janice Adams. Starting Monday, October 6th, join me on my new day at new time, Monday evenings at 8, for the Janice Adams Show. Crucial conversations about race, every race, and courage. The courage to listen, to speak up, to make a way out of no way. The Janice Adams Show, Monday nights at 8, starting October 6th on Radio Catskill.
From our studio in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.
Good morning. Welcome to Catskill Character. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg. And with me today is Barryville, New York resident David Johnston. David grew up in South Minneapolis and was educated through the eighth grade in a Montessori school. He'll tell us about that, as well as his days at St. Olaf College, which provided students with many study abroad programs. David took full advantage of that, leading to his life-changing experience in the Peace Corps after college. This man has had a life, and I haven't even touched on his musical skills or the fact that he is a successful editor and has also branched out into directing. All will be revealed. Here we go. Welcome to Catskill Character, David.
Thank you, Donna. Thank you for having me on.
You know, I've had several people from the Midwest on the show, but for today, I am really interested in you telling us about your experience growing up in South Minneapolis and attending a Montessori school.
I grew up in South Minneapolis in kind of a quiet neighborhood of the city that was about 10 minutes from downtown. And it was a very free life in some ways. We were able to kind of run around, do what we wanted. It was a very safe area. I had parents that were not helicopter parents. They were relaxed, and they let my sister and I kind of just explore the world and figure out our way through childhood. And part of that was also, I went to a Montessori school, which was actually a very good fit for a kid like me that I didn't really thrive in a traditional school setting. And Montessori was a great fit because it's self-directed activity. It's, you know, a hands-on approach to learning. I didn't learn math on paper. I learned math on a bead frame. I learned to write with my finger on sandpaper tablets of letters that were in cursive. It was a very sensorial learning method that was a great fit for, I think, who I am and how I needed to learn. Because I think kind of a more rigid elementary schooling would have been a little harder for me. So it was great.
Did you tell me your mother was a teacher?
Yeah. So my mother taught at the Montessori school as well. Mm-hmm. She was the Phi Ed teacher. And so it was an interesting challenge as a active young boy who wasn't always following the rules. Sometimes I would be in trouble before I even got home from school because my teacher would talk to my mom at lunch and give her the story of what I had done that morning or what I hadn't done that morning. But it was also nice to be able to spend time in the gym before school and after school. I loved sports. I loved activity. I was very fortunate to go to such a great school and have my mother really facilitate that for us.
And what'd your dad do?
My dad worked in electronic testing. He traveled a lot for work, which, you know, was not always the easiest thing for our family, but we got to go on great vacations and, you know, use the frequent flyer miles. And I was able to, even as a young boy, see the world and start to think about, you know, what I wanted to do later in life. And I always had this kind of sense of adventure inside of me.
You were also a musician. So when did that begin? Did you have formal training?
Both my parents were music lovers, but neither of them, I would say, was accomplished at playing an instrument or anything. But there was a lot of singing. There was always a lot of music in our home growing up. I remember Gordon Lightfoot and Cat Stevens and the Beatles. And on the weekends, the record player was almost always going. going. I had piano lessons. It wasn't a fit for me. Again, it was probably too structured and too rigid, but I loved trying to play things on the piano. And then later in high school, my sister had a guitar that she wasn't playing. And so I just picked up this guitar that my sister had and started teaching myself. And it was right as you could go online and start to find chords and tablature and ways to teach yourself how to play an instrument. And so I really started to sit at the computer and learn how to play the guitar by looking up songs that I was interested in, things, musicians that I loved. I was self-taught. And later on, you know, in college, I started to play more frequently and got into trying to learn different techniques and different styles of guitar. And I had friends that were musicians at my school and it really kept me motivated to keep playing.
Well, speaking of college, you went to St. Olaf's College, where your dad and other family members went. So I'd like you to talk about that. I know they had a study abroad program there. So let's hear about that.
My dad and all of his siblings actually went to this small liberal arts college in southern Minnesota. I didn't know what I wanted to do. Like a lot of teenage boys, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And I remember my dad saying, well, let's go look at some schools. And so I was like, okay. And so he organized it. And of course, one of the schools that he was excited about was St. Olaf, where he had gone. There wasn't any pressure. I went and the campus was beautiful. I was really interested in the fact that you could do study abroad for a significant amount of your time in college and still graduate on time. And so I applied and I got in and fell into being a French major, which was, it was kind of an accident. I didn't really seek it out. It became the only way that I could study abroad and graduate on time. So I was a French major and I was, I don't want to say the worst, but I was probably the least accomplished of the people that had declared to be French majors. But part of that was that I got to study abroad. My sophomore year, I went to Martinique in the Caribbean, which I really loved. And after I came back from that, I was like, well, I really want to go for a semester in my junior year somewhere. And so I had found that there was a program in Senegal in West Africa, and kids from the school had gone there previously and they had a connection with this program. So I applied to go to Senegal for a semester of my junior year. And I had also knew some about Senegal because we had a Senegalese man living in our home. He was an Amity scholar with the Montessori school. And so I already had some familiarity with the country and I was really excited to learn more. And I did that my junior year and it was an amazing experience. And I loved every moment of it, made great friends. It was just, Dakar is just a wild city. The capital of Senegal is just in your face, loud, amazing culture, music. The people are very warm and friendly, sometimes too warm and friendly. And you have to, like, you know, walk the other way because they won't stop talking to you. But it was such a fond time there. And I loved my study abroad experience in Senegal. And part of that program that I was in Senegal is they required us to do 1 week with a Peace Corps volunteer that was somewhere throughout the country. And they facilitated bringing you to that Peace Corps volunteer and you lived in their home in the village with that Peace Corps volunteer to just see a whole other side of what the country of Senegal was besides the capital, Dakar. And so we did that. And
excuse me for 1 second. Would you tell the listener exactly where Senegal is?
Yeah. So Senegal is actually, it's, if you're looking at the continent of Africa, it's actually the furthest, most western point in continental Africa is Senegal. It's if you come at the round part, it's about halfway down the round part on the bulb of the western part of Africa.
Okay, good.
Mauritania to the north, Guinea-Bissau to the south, Mali to the east. And Gambia, it sandwiches the country of Gambia. I did my week with the Peace Corps volunteer and I was enthralled. This was eye-opening, super cool. And I already had in my mind that this was something that maybe I would want to do after I graduated college.
I know I just heard about the Peace Corps, but did you have before that any other ideas of what you wanted to do?
No, I didn't. When I graduated, I had this idea of maybe wanting to do the Peace Corps in the back of my head. And I was not quite sure at the time. I think I just, I don't know. It was, you think back at those moments and you're kind of, it's like you're a young adult and you have all this freedom all of a sudden. And, you know, so I got a job in Minneapolis right out of college working at a nonprofit law firm. And I, you know, after a few months, I started to kind of feel antsy and didn't know what the next thing was. And so, my girlfriend at the time, her mother had actually been in the Peace Corps, and I was talking to her about it one night, and, you know, she really encouraged me to seek out the application and just find out if it was an option. And so I did that and I got in, and because of my background in being a French major in college, they decided to offer me a placement in Francophone West Africa, sub-Saharan Africa. And basically you don't get to pick a country when you're going into the Peace Corps. You get to pick a region. And then once they've found an assignment for you, they offer you an assignment in a particular country, and you can either accept or reject the assignment. And so the first place that they offered me was a country called Togo. And I didn't even think twice. I was going. I was super excited.
And where exactly is Togo?
So Togo's kind of actually, I always describe it as being in the armpit of Africa. It's kind of closer to Ghana, Benin, Nigeria.
Oh, okay.
And further down the continent from Senegal. And it's a little country that is kind of just carved straight up from the coast. It almost looks like a Vermont or a New Hampshire, just this kind of long, thin country. And I didn't know too much about it before going, but
I'm assuming they don't speak French there.
They do speak French.
Oh, they do.
Yeah.
Oh.
That was why part of why the placement was, you know, for a French speaker would be,
okay.
You know, but the Peace Corps sends people that don't have a background in the language of the country they're going to necessarily. So there were some people that I was volunteering with that were learning French basically from the ground up. I was very fortunate to come in with this stronger background in the home country language, but also within a country, it was a tiny country. There was something like 67 different dialects that were spoken within this country of 5 million people. Language was equally important to being able to speak French, because a lot of people who didn't have a formal education in the villages would only be able to speak the local language of the of their ethnicity or their localities. But I was placed in a village. So you do training in country when you're in the Peace Corps. You do 3 months of intensive training about the program that you're in. I was in the natural resource management program, which was focused on agroforestry and helping farmers, people that, you know, were kind of living off the land, with green fertilization, ways to help get their soils healthy again, because it's a really hard climate, get good soil health.
I want to talk more about Togo, but I think right now we're going to take a break. So hang on, we're going to have more with David Johnston. This is Catskill Character with me, Donna Fellenberg, on Radio Catskill. We'll be right back.
On last week's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, Adam Burke had questions about AI allowing pets to testify in court.
Will they allow hostile witnesses? And by hostile witnesses, I mean cats.
I'm Nagin Farsad, in for Peter Sagal. The government shut down this week, but lucky for us, we're used to operating without federal funding. So join us for Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
We should use some of these dangerous cities as training grounds.
The president mused about using U.S. forces against the enemy within. New York Times columnist Jamel Bowie suggests it was ever thus.
If you go back to a younger Donald Trump after the Tiananmen Square massacre, you'll hear Trump praise the Chinese government for its handling of those protests.
Don't miss this week's On the Media from WNYC.
Saturday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Catskill Character. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg, and if you've just joined us, I've been speaking with Barrieville, New York resident David Johnston. In the first half of the show, David told us about growing up in South Minneapolis, attending a Montessori school through the eighth grade, his college experience as a student studying abroad, and we began to talk about his time in the Peace Corps after graduating from St. Olaf's. In the second half of the show, we're going to continue looking at David's time in the Peace Corps and how one person can really make a difference. We'll also be discussing David's career as a video editor, and we'll end up with David's thoughts about community. David, I'd love for you to tell the listener about the very important encounter you had with a blind 6-year-old member of the village you were assigned to in Togo.
In the Peace Corps, they kind of throw you into an unstructured environment. They throw you into this village. You're by yourself. You're not placed with any other volunteers. And generally, you're pretty far away from them as well. So it really forces you to engage and interact with the people in the community. And the first year, I had made some friends. I'd, you know, tried to figure out what I was going to do as far as projects related to why the program had put me in this village. And it's difficult. It's really unstructured. It's hard to get people to show up to do things sometimes. So I had a lot of time in between trying to do Peace Corps related work. And I would just be around my house and I would talk to people. I had my guitar. I read a lot of books. And inevitably, people would just stop by to talk because there's not that much that goes on in a village. And I remember one day in particular, a man that lived behind my house brought over this 6-year-old boy. He's like, "That you need to meet this. You need to meet this kid. His name's Zoglo." And he brought this kid over and he was 6 years old and he had this little plastic motor fuel container that was empty. And he said something to the kid and all of a sudden the kid sits down and starts drumming on this motor fuel container and singing. Amazing rhythm, projecting his voice, so much joy and happiness. And I was blown away. I was like, "Wow, this is really cool." And here I have been playing guitar by myself. And I was like, "Well, maybe I can start playing guitar with this kid and we can do something." And so this kid Zoglo would come by my house every day. And first it was very difficult because he only spoke local language. So we really kind of figured it out over the course of a few months. It was a lot of stop and start and do this. And it was probably pretty funny if someone could, you know, sit there and watch us trying to learn songs together. But he had written all these songs. And so we started to practice these songs and it made me learn the language. And it was great for him because he started to really grow as a musician. That was a really special relationship. And it's an interesting part of Peace Corps. They're not just there to do projects or plant trees or work with medical clinics or teach English or help get microfinance. Peace Corps also has a huge emphasis on cultural exchange, literally just having conversations, telling people about who you are as an American and hearing who they are. I think it is probably the most valuable part of the Peace Corps. You kind of essentially become a little diplomat for your country. It was the best part of my Peace Corps experience. Before I left the Peace Corps, I helped him get into a boarding school that was nearby where he could get a formal education because at home they didn't have the means to help a blind kid at the local schools. It was a really important part of my service in the Peace Corps.
He's a musician now, right? And he's got videos and recordings. I mean, you sent a couple to me. It was just amazing. And he's a grown adult and you still have a relationship with him. You and Aaron have gone back to see him a couple of times. It must be so rewarding when you go back there to see him.
It was such an important part of my life, being in the Peace Corps, and to feel like it's still a part of my life, it really makes me feel good. And so Zoglo's now 25. He's done very well for himself. And in between singing and doing music, he makes soap. He has like a liquid soap process that he was taught how to do. So it's pretty incredible to watch a blind person handling these toxic ingredients. And he does it all, and he sells the soap, and people love buying it from him. We keep in touch. We go back every 3 or 4 years and visit the village. I feel like I made a huge impact in his life, and he made a huge impact in my life. So it's really gratifying, you know, for me to feel like that part of my life really contributed to making the world a better place.
I have a much better understanding now of what the Peace Corps really is. You gave me a boots on the ground experience. And so I hope the listener appreciates it as much as I do. It's great.
I'm a huge advocate of the Peace Corps.
Yeah.
And if anyone ever wants, is ever considering it, and you don't have to be right out of college, you can be later in life. It's an amazing program that still exists, is still available to all American citizens. And you can really lean on your strengths, what you're good at, and you can bring that to the world.
Fantastic. You know, we don't have a lot of time left, and I wanted you to give the listener kind of an idea of what you're doing now.
After I came back from the Peace Corps, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. That's kind of a common theme I feel like here, is that I get to these crossroads in life, and I don't really make a proactive decision, but something kind of falls into my lap. Video editing. I started off as a client services employee at a post-production company in Manhattan that was doing short form commercials, music videos. And I was just working the job, biding my time, trying to figure out what was next. And it ended up just really sticking with me, and I didn't know it. But I ended up kind of growing through a bunch of different roles at that company, and becoming an editor and having my own clients. And eventually that business closed, and I left the company I had started at, and with a couple colleagues and my mentor from the previous company, we opened a new business in 2020 in Manhattan as well. And video editing is interestingly a thing that kind of sat in between a bunch of my interests. It's visual. I love taking photos growing up. I loved doing photography, amateur photography. I loved music. I loved storytelling. And it's kind of this confluence of a bunch of different things that were strengths that I didn't know. And it was like, oh, wow, this is a really good fit for me. That's where I am now. That's what I still do. I do a lot of advertising and TV commercials. Hopefully later in life, I'll get back to more creative, expressive forms. But right now, it's bringing money in and help pay the bills.
So there's only one thing missing from everything that we've been talking about, and that is the house in the country. So how did you end up getting to Barryville?
Our friends, Chris and Scott, invited us to their cabin just outside of Narrowsburg. And I must have asked Scott 50 questions about how the house works. Where do you get your water? How does the trash work? I wanted to know everything. And I came back from that weekend and I was like, I need to do this. So I started looking around, and my wife, Erin, and I landed on this area largely because we knew Chris and Scott. It just helps to know one person. And so we ended up finding a house in Barryville that we loved, needed some work. We spent the first 4 months of that house remodeling. It was in rough shape. After we finished the remodeling, we started spending the weekends there, and it was the highlight of my week. Every week was that moment. I opened the door and your blood pressure just drops and you smell the air, and I was taken away immediately. Then the pandemic came shortly thereafter, and we ended up living full time at that house. And that time of the pandemic was a level of connection with the area and with the community that I don't think I would have had without that concentrated time of day in and day out being there and understanding what that experience was. And we then fell in love with the area all over again.
And you and Erin are both very involved in the community up there. And you told me when we first spoke how important community is to both of you.
Yeah. The first year we were there, we didn't really know anybody. And there was a farmer's market in Barryville that was decamping to go to Narrowsburg. And there was a big push in the community to try to keep a farmer's market in Barryville. And we got connected to John Pizzolatto and found out that he was trying to start a farmer's market. And he was like, come down, join us. You can be on the board. And I was like, all right, well, we don't know these people. Let's go down and see what it's all about. And so Aaron and I became a part of the founding board of the Berryville Farmer's Market. Aaron's more involved than I am now, but we both were very involved the first few years. And it's the highlight of our weekend. And we've met so many people. And it's, you know, our entire social life is now upstate. We used to have, you know, a lot of friends in the city, but now we are very much Sullivan County socialites. And of course, being married to Aaron, who I always say is Sullivan County famous or Berryville famous. She doesn't like that. There's hardly a weekend where we aren't invited to a dinner or to come by somebody's house. And it's so sweet. And we just love our upstate family so much.
And we have to mention the fact that you are the secretary of a hunting club.
You know, I had grown up fishing and I had grown up doing a lot of outdoors things. But during the pandemic, I had this interest in learning how to hunt. So another buddy and I, we would get together on the weekends and we would do our target shooting and kind of getting used to being first-time hunters. First year I went out and I didn't even know you could have a tree stand. I was just sitting on the ground. It was miserable. My joints were hurting. I was sitting in like a little on the ground camp chair. My back was sore. And I spent 3 weeks, maybe saw two deer. And then the last day of the hunting season, a buck came out and I got the buck and it was a big reward for all that pain. And I realized that, you know, after all of that, that I actually had really enjoyed the lead up to that, just sitting in the woods, the peace, the tranquility, listening to the animals, seeing the forest go from being dark to completely alive in the morning, from silent to all the motion, the wind, all the other animals moving. That first year, one time, just an owl landing 8 feet above my head and just calling and not knowing I was there. That was something that never would have happened had I not, you know, been out hunting. And there's some stigma around hunting in our country, but I also think that there is a part of it that's very meditative and peaceful. And I enjoy that part so much. And my time in the woods is some of my favorite time that I spend at Berryville.
Well, David, I have really enjoyed having you on today. I've learned so much. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you. Thank you. I really enjoyed chatting with you, Donna.
You've been listening to Catskill Character on Radio Catskill, coming at you from Liberty, New York. Today's guest has been David Johnston of Berryville, New York. David, do you have a website?
Yeah, my business's website is othernyc.com. That's othernyc.com.
Okay, othernyc.com. That's great. Catskill Character is on every Saturday at 10:30, except the last Saturday of the month, when Greg Triggs brings us Travels with Triggs. Please join us then for more fabulous stories from fascinating characters of the Catskills and beyond. I'm Donna Fellenberg. Thanks so much for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from The Homestead School, Montessori Education, preschool through early college with campuses in Glens Bay and Hurleyville, building the intelligence, creativity, connection, and skills for an ecological future since 1978. TheHomesteadSchool.com. And from Sullivan 180, building healthy communities through people, places, and policy, one degree at a time. More information at Sullivan180.org. And from listeners like you.
Hey there, Jason Dole here asking you to help Radio Catskill kick off our fall fun drive in person at the Double Down on Radio Catskill event. It's going to be a lot of fun next Sunday afternoon at the Arnold House in Livingston Manor. Free admission, fun games for kids and adults, tunes by DJ Tikka Masala, delicious hors d'oeuvres, cash bar, and your chance to win great prizes from local businesses. Don't miss Double Down on Radio Catskill Sunday, October 12th, 2 to 5 at the Arnold House.
Hi, I'm Janice Adams. Starting Monday, October 6th, join me on my new day and new time, Monday evenings at 8, for the Janice Adams Show. Conversations about how to turn silence into voice, setbacks into strategy, and how to turn crisis into courage in these trying times. The Janice Adams Show, Monday nights at 8, starting October 6th on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville. You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.